future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who would it now?
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome into the bullpen, Houston. Glad to have you here with us. Alongside me, Brian McDonald, found on the X at Sat by BMAC. To my right is Cam Smith, found on X at Clutch City Cam. Welcome back, Cam. You were out last week. Good to have you back. And, of course, as always, Sean Mapes is here. I'm found on the X at Sean A. Mapes. And behind the glass, our man Johnny Belmer, third coast Johnny. We have a little problem with your microphone, Cam, there. What's going on here? We need to switch. Okay, is that what we're doing? Okay, we're doing this on the fly. Yeah, no, it's the weekend. Like I think and we're proving it in the moment as I'm trying to talk this out. Cam just blew his ears out. R.I.P. to his ears. Yeah, but we're workshopping. There we go. We're workshopping on the fly because this is the weekend. The standards are lower, and now the microphone won't stand up. You know, this is how it goes sometimes on the bullpen. You gonna be okay, Cam? You're gonna survive the great headphone blast of 2024?
Yeah, I'm Gucci now.
You're Gucci. Okay, well, you're gonna keep me young using words like that. What did I? I think I had used. I think I got.
You used Stan.
Yes,
and
that's
that's from an Eminem song from 1999. You said, not to go Gen Z, but I'm not a stan of this.
I know. It wasn't one of my finer moments. Though I did work in, what did I work? I worked in something useful. I know cap. I said no. I would use no cap after that.
So. Let me be the first to wish you a happy Father's Day.
Oh, thank you. Yes, kid, Father's Day tomorrow. I know, Cam, you don't have any kids, right?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. All right. So I am the only father here. I knew Sean and Johnny didn't have any, but all right. Well, thank you, Sean. I appreciate that. Someone else who I think is a father, but will have plenty of time to celebrate at home, Jose Abreu. His ass is out off the Houston Astros because, golf claps are warranted here. Jose Abreu got released from the Houston Astros. I mean, I think we could start by, I don't care how much is left, like $30 million left on his $58 million contract that the Astros gave him a couple years ago. I don't care how much was left. As Keith Law and others have pointed out, the money was the money no matter what at this point. This is not football where it's guaranteed dollars versus total dollars. Baseball, everything's guaranteed, so it didn't matter. They got him off the team. Sean, you put in his numbers as an Astro. 176 games, hit .217, .625 OPS, 20 home runs. Just will go down as one of the absolute worst signings, not just in Astros history, but in Houston sports history. Your initial thoughts when you finally saw the news that the Jose Abreu nightmare was over?
I honestly couldn't, for a split second, I couldn't believe they actually did it.
I know, I couldn't either.
I thought it was some sort of ruse, some sort of
fake account.
Yeah, and then I saw that it was perfect because they obviously sent it as a press release, and so Brian McTaggart tweeted, and then Chandler Rome tweeted, and then Ari Alexander, like everyone that you trust tweets
that you confirmed it,
and you're like, all right, Mark Berman said it happened. Like, we were talking about it. I mean, we've talked about it a lot.
Did it happen during your show?
No, it happened. It happened
Friday, right?
Yeah, it happened during Galan George, but I was off. Show on Friday, but yeah, I think. Probably the day before, I said, what they should do is just cut Jose Abreu. I don't think they will because that's a lot of money and that's somewhat understandable, da 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 da. And then 24 hours later, they actually just do it. They do it. Jim Crane, he heard people talking, heard people chirping at him. Maybe members of the Luno family chirping at him. He said, I'm a changed man. No more Mr. Nice Jim Crane. This was Mr. Nice Jim Crane somehow.
I can't tell you where this came from because I don't want to out anybody, but I heard like third hand that Jim Crane has actually been at this point for at least a few weeks, but he was letting Jeff Bagwell kind of talk him into, a little bit more time. So I'm glad that Jim Crane finally actually took, he's the freaking owner. I'm glad he actually took the role of owner back and overstepped Jeff Bagwell's desire to make this Jose Abreu thing work. I don't look. First base is still going to be an issue, I think, going forward. But I mean, Cam, it's got it. I mean, nothing else. It's just got to feel good not to have to look at the lineup card and see Jose Abreu's name in it anymore.
No. And what happens when you played Dubon last night at first base? He hit a home run. So it was like the greatest night of the season for me personally, because I'm over Abreu. I was on board with him when they first signed him.
I think everyone was.
Yeah.
I mean, I was.
And shortly,
the third year was...
I'm just kind of wondering, I wonder if Bagwell dragged it out because it's a fellow first baseman. Like, I wonder if it was like another position player, if Bagwell would have been like, you know what, like, we're over this, we've tried. But I wonder if he let it drag out so long because they played the same position. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad Abreu's gone. I feel like this team can kind of like put the right foot forward and move on. Obviously, they have to fill in the first base spot. But when Abreu was out this year, the Astros played their best ball. So that right there is a highlight in itself.
Yeah, I mean, he was on, and just something that Jeremy Brandon was talking about, he was on pace to set like the worst negative WAR number in all time, and not just set it. But it was like, I think the all-time WAR record as far as negative was like negative four something. At one point before Abreu took his vacation in Florida for a couple of weeks, he was on pace to be like in a negative seven WAR. It wasn't just that he was bad. Like, I mean, you've had bad first base play before. Hell, John Singleton's not a good first baseman overall when you look at the totality of his numbers. But you just can't have like the worst offensive season. And there's levels to this, right? Like, you can have you dealt with Adam Everett years ago being a bad offensive hitter, but it didn't matter because you had enough good offensive hitters around him. You can have bad offensive play, but I mean, even from Adam Everett to Jose Abreu, it's at a completely different level of suck.
Don't put Adam Everett on him. Come on, that's NL 2005 NL champion Adam Everett.
He had a great glove. He had a great glove.
Great glove.
I think Abreu's WAR was like negative 1.8 when they finally cut him.
Yeah, so that's not even a full half season. That's only like what, a month and a half.
He was definitely on pace to be the worst player if you're comparing it to the WAR, like for sure. Like, so you know, now he can take that $30 million and go work on his swing.
Maybe he can find a smile again like Shawn Michaels. There's a reference for the wrestling fans. So, I mean, I don't know where you guys think Jose Abreu now goes down as one of the worst free agent signings in Houston sports history. I mean, a few names that we put into the Google Doc. I don't know where you think Jose Abreu ranks amongst these, but Ed Reed, certainly someone who's going to fit into this lid. Coach Ed Reed, I think he got maybe four or five games. They cut him midseason, too. He didn't seem like he ever wanted to be there, but maybe the Texans were the only place to offer him a contract, so he went there and it seemed like he was unhappy the entire time, but that'll...
He just turned into like Bob Sanders. He was just trying to headhunt at the end of his career, and it's just like, hey, we need you to actually play the position and cover instead of just trying to knock people's blocks off. Like, but yeah, that was definitely a terrible sign.
Maybe he'd been playing too much Madden, the hit stick, and just he'd gotten addicted to it, trying to level people out.
That will happen.
I mean, you flick the right thumbstick, and you get the fumble, man. It's a great feeling.
Camera shakes.
I mean, look, I can see why you would get addicted to it. I get it. Kelvin Cato. I mean, that was an awful signing. I know Joel's told the story, but they signed him, and not only did they sign him, I believe I have the time on this right. He has like this monster preseason game, and then they offer him a huge extension on top of just having him on the roster under the contract he signed for. So,
and Kelvin Cato, I was looking at it the other day.
Was it a triple double in the preseason? It was a monster game.
He had a big game, but his like averages for the Rockets were like 5 points,
yeah,
four
he
rebounds.
Was awful. He was just a guy. Like... He was just a guy. But they offered him some.
I'm sorry, 6 points, oh, six rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, let's be respectful here.
In five seasons with the Rockets.
God, yeah, I don't even. If you have the contract, tell me. But I'm not going to look it up because it's depressing.
NBA money now.
Right. You have to put yourself in the mind or the time frame in the mindset of what that was. That 2001.
Yeah, 2000.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's obviously the landscape of NBA contracts has completely changed. And by today's standards, it would look extremely mild. But at the time, it was a crazy deal for a guy, like you said, the average 6-6. Amon Green, someone I put in here, the Texans signed him off of Green Bay. What could go wrong signing an older running back? I mean, what has ever gone wrong by signing an aging running back? And he was absolutely awful. Didn't do anything for a bad Texans team. Kaz Matsui. For the Astros, not only was he not a good player, but he had
I remember that.
One of the most unfortunate medical diagnoses that would be made public. I mean, I can't. You know what? That's actually a Mount Rushmore plus one idea. Unfortunate medical diagnoses that you wouldn't want to be made public. Certainly, Kaz Matsui, the way what he got diagnosed with is up there.
Please remind me.
No, I'm not going to.
Oh,
I'm not going. Yeah, you just Google it. Can we say the first part of that? I don't know if we can.
If you're being clinical, I think you can.
If we're being clinical, okay. All right, screw it. It's Saturday.
Wow.
Okay, and you looked it up. You want to say it? Come on. You took off last week. This is on you.
Yes. So in 2008, unfortunately, Houston Astros second baseman Kaz Matsui underwent surgery to repair an anal fissure.
Johnny's just, he's looking for the, Johnny, did you dump that?
No, I was waiting by the dump button, though, just in case. Right. I didn't know what to expect.
It's a clinical term.
How dare you?
It is.
I mean, we're being mature over here, Johnny. You're the one that's got your mind to go. This is a clinical thing that Kaz Matsui went to the doctor for and got surgery for. I mean, I you know what? I give him credit for being strong and brave enough to come public and go forth with this. So
I can see why he struggled.
Yeah, no, that would be a problem if you're trying to hit the curveball while dealing with anal fissures.
Yeah, yes. It makes sense why, his...
We're trying to field a ground ball and you're having to drop low and...
Okay, so next one, Woody Williams. Woody Williams, nothing immature to say about Woody Williams, but he was an awful pitcher. And again, some like kind of like Amon Green, who's a running back in his 30s when the Texans signed him. Woody Williams was damn near 40. Now, 40, obviously, it's a young man's age. I mean, yeah. I can attest to that. But
still got your whole life ahead of him.
Whole life in front of him. Yeah, exactly. No midlife crisis here. But Woody Williams was a bad pitcher on an Astros team that was going nowhere. This is, post-2005 World Series appearance. And they're just clinging on to the name. And there's a few other names.
I was going
to
say, there's a lot of post-2005.
And the next couple are some of those guys. Like, I mean, Woody Williams, Ivan Rodriguez, Miguel Tejada.
Tejada was.
I mean, not only was Tejada bad, when you got him, he aged 2 years before he played a game. So it was, man.
Woody Williams only gave up 35 home runs, okay?
In 40. One season?
Yes, in 180, in 188 innings, he gave up 35 home runs.
Oh, my God.
You got to be careful, though. He's from Houston, so he might be listening.
No, go Cougs. Go Cougs, as Jeremy would say. But 35 home runs in one season, just.
Would we throw Carlos Gomez into the mix?
He was a trade. If I'm being technical, he was a trade.
He was a trade.
Yeah.
Okay, you're right.
He was with he came along with Mike Fiers in the trade for they got Gomez and Mike Fiers and ended up giving away Josh Hader and some other pieces.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So I mean, one of the worst trades ever. But in free agent signings, it's a different conversation.
Miguel Tejada hit 300 with the Astros.
Did he really?
Yeah, he had. I know he had one.
Okay,
good year
give
with
me
us,
the
right?
Give me the rest of his line here, Sean. I mean, did he actually have a good season here?
He had he had two seasons. Last season, he had 313 with an OPS of 795.
Okay, that's not bad.
Yeah,
okay,
one and a half WAR.
That's crazy. He actually
positive WAR.
He made the All Star game both seasons with us.
Did he really?
That might have been
name ID.
And you had to have one All Star.
That was from the era.
Corniest role in sports.
From the era, yeah.
No, it's still
okay. I am sorry for besmirching the good name of Miguel Tejada.
I feel like that really underscores how bad how bad Jose Abreu has been. That the bad contracts in the past, you look at their numbers, you're like, they're just average players.
Right, they're average bad. That's the kind of bring this
you
full
up,
circle.
You brought up Adam Everett. Yeah. Adam Everett hit 250 with the Astros.
Right. I remember because I'm a man of a certain age, I have to bring up Everett Ausmus every time we talk about, bad lineup construction. But I have to remember, like, Everett Ausmus, like, now we're talking about bad being what, a guy that hit, I think Jose Abreu was damn near right at 100, I believe, was his batting average. And we're talking about Adam Everett and Brad Ausmus. They were hitting like 240, 250. I'd kill for Jose Abreu.
He'd still be on the team.
Yes, exactly. If Jose Abreu was hitting Adam Everett levels, he'd still be on the team, and wouldn't have crap to say about it.
I would take Jose Abreu at Chris Carter's average if he was dropping 35.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Chris
Carter's hitting 35, 40 home runs. Yeah. All right. That's enough of Jose Abreu.
Brock Osweiler, too.
Oh, yes. Okay. I didn't have him on the list, but that is, I mean, if it's not Jose Abreu, it has to be Brock Osweiler,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
because you had to trade away you had to attach a second round pick, staple it to his head to get him sent to Cleveland.
Ouch. Yeah, you
I know. It was kind of violent imagery. I don't know.
He also plays like the most important position in sports.
In all of
and
sports,
you completely blew it. And he never met Bill O'Brien before he was a Houston Texan.
Well, at least they followed up that up with a selecting a quarterback that just went really well. I mean, nothing possibly could go wrong with the quarterback they selected next. So Texans definitely made up for it. Oh, it doesn't matter. C.J. Stroud now. We're okay.
Yeah,
we're,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
We're okay.
I don't know why you brought up Tom Savage all of a sudden.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Tom Savage doesn't have a residence at the Houstonian. We know that. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. When we come back, we'll talk about last night's game and Hunter Brown dominating and kind of the trend and the upward trend that is that he's been on. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You're back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. If you want to talk about anything we've discussed so far with Jose Abreu, what we're about to talk about now with Hunter Brown, or of course the Texans coming up later in the show, give us a call on the HRMP listener line or text us at 713-780-3776. So Hunter Brown last night, pretty damn good. I mean, that's even kind of underselling. I think you could say he was dominant. Seven innings, no walks, just five hits, strikes out nine. And like, it's been a bad season. So I hate taking small sample sizes in a desperate search for positivity. Like, hey, look at this guy. Like he was great over a five game stretch. You know, let's think about what this could be for the future. But Hunter Brown, if you take every start he's had, and it's been 11 since that blow up in Kansas City where he gave up 11 hits and I think nine runs in the first inning, the 11 starts since then, he's six innings pitched, 68 strikeouts, so more than a strikeout per inning with a 3.56 ERA. I mean, that is not ace level, but that's quality two, a very good three in a starting rotation. And you would take those numbers, but to even dial it in even over a smaller sample size, last five starts, he's been six innings pitched or more in every start of those five, and his ERA over that stretch, that five-game stretch, 1.74. Sean, I mean, Hunter Brown, I don't know what we make of it for the long term, but Hunter Brown's been great recently.
Yeah, and even just in the 2024 term, it makes the reporting that how aggressive the Astros are looking for starting pitching. I get that they have had a lot of injuries, but if you really go through it, and we'll see with this Verlander scratch start today, but you have Verlander, Fromber, you have to throw Ronel Blanco in there for how he's pitched so far this season, and you have Hunter Brown, who, like you said, in his last five starts has been everything that you'd want Hunter Brown to be coming into the season. So the aggression in which they're looking for starting pitching help, it is a little odd, because as of late, that hasn't really been what's ailed you, and Hunter Brown is really a part of that.
Well, I think the clutch thing is what you mentioned, the six innings. The fact that he's been able to go six innings, five games in a row is huge, because that has been the issue with a lot of these pitchers is three, four, or five innings. Even last year, when our pitchers were pitching really great, a lot of times they were getting taken out in the fifth inning, and so much bullpen arms were getting taxed. So the fact that he's able to go six innings, I think, is the biggest piece right there.
I mean, I don't know what this would say for the Astros going forward. I mean, Sean, you mentioned there's been reports, and this was something I was going to get to later, but I mean, let's go into a little bit right now. There was reports from, let's see, who was it exactly? Oh, yeah, John Heyman, saying that the Astros are going to go out and try to make the move for two starting pitchers. I mean, when you look at the starting rotation, I mean, assuming Verlander is just a one-game thing, Verlander, Fromber obviously has his ups and downs, but you're not going to replace him in the lineup. Hunter Brown's been great recently. Spencer Arrighetti's actually been pretty good recently. And then Ronel Blanco's had a good season. I get that you probably don't want to have to plan and write in ink that Spencer Arrighetti and Hunter Brown are going to be the guys that carry you to a resurgence that leads into a playoff run. But, I mean, I don't know what tells the team. I mean, I come at it from a couple angles. One, because they're pitching well, whoever you go out and add at the deadline isn't necessarily going to be improving what you already have because they're pitching well. And two, what does it tell a locker room if you take a guy who's been, you know, mid-3 ERA over the last 11 starts and kick him to the curb and put him in the bullpen because you went out and traded for some random guy at the trade deadline?
Yeah, and I have a hard time seeing the starting pitcher that they get being a Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke type, the type move that they've made in the past where you're getting a top-of-the-line starter. So while, yes, at a certain point you do need just MLB-level innings from these guys with the amount of injuries that they've had with the starting rotation, but yeah, you bring up a good point of like, okay, then who are you taking out of this rotation? Because you can't take out Fromber or Justin Verlander.
Or Blanco.
Yeah, you can't take out Blanco the way he's pitched. So it's between Arrighetti. And maybe it's Arrighetti. Maybe they want to limit the amount of innings they put on his arm.
That's fine, but that's one.
Yeah.
You got to tell. Yeah, I mean, not you, but you got to tell me who
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
You got to tell me who the other guy is.
I have just as much sway as Dana Brown in the Astros front office.
I can't argue with that. I really can't argue with that. But yeah, I'm really encouraged by Hunter Brown. Look, I think he was also, and we've discussed this at various times, I think he was unfairly labeled. It was because people were putting the side-by-side video of the delivery against Justin Verlander. It's like, oh, well, Justin Verlander, you know, former first-round pick, rookie of the year. I think he was in the World Series his rookie year with the Tigers. I mean, he was off to the races right away.
Yeah.
I mean, and Hunter Brown, those two starts he had in 2022 as a rookie before the Astros put him in the bullpen when the playoffs started, he was great in those. I believe he was 6 innings, 1 earned run, or 6 innings, 2 earned runs in both those starts. So the expectations going into last season were through the roof. I mean, people were calling him, you know, baby JV, mini JV, whatever the terminology people would use would be. And I think it was just unfair to ever expect that from Hunter Brown. But, Cam, I mean, there's nothing to say but positive things right now from the way Hunter Brown's pitched recently.
No, he's pitched great. And, yeah, to your point of comparing him to JV, that was the silliest thing I have ever heard, because not once before he took the mound with the Astros was he ever, 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 ever compared to JV. So it's just like, okay, because they have similar pitching styles, you're going to label this guy as the baby JV? Like, that is such an unfair comparison to put on this guy's shoulders. But, yeah, the last couple games, he has been clutch, and I think he's going to keep with it. I think as far as, like, if we bring in another pitcher, obviously I think Arrighetti is going to go first. Like, he's out of the rotation first, and then I think it's followed up by Brown. But the only thing is they don't have the pieces, like you said, Sean, to bring in somebody that's like a Verlander stature. So they're going to bring in, I think, like a mid-tier guy, and I think it's going to be like that third starter type of guy. And maybe they push it to a six-man rotation because we've seen how many injuries this rotation has that, you know, maybe they don't want to stretch it out to a five-man rotation anymore. But it would be a shame, I guess, for me to see Hunter Brown go on this little streak he's going and then throw him back in, like, the bullpen. Because I feel like they did that with Brad Peacock back in the day. Like, Peacock would have these really good stretches of starting games. They would throw him back into the bullpen.
Yeah.
Then they would pull
Won
him
the
out.
World Series,
then they would throw him back in the bullpen. It's just kind of like, okay,
God,
establish what you're going to do with these pitchers. Like, if you're going to have Hunter Brown as a starter, keep him as a starter. Don't keep going back and forth between the bullpen and the starting pitching. So, but, yeah, I mean, he's looked really good. It's been impressive.
Hey, I didn't think when I woke up today I'd be yearning for the days of Brad Peacock.
Brad Peacock got a shout out from the president when they visited the White House.
Rightfully so.
Brad Peacock. I mean, let's not talk down the man's career. He was at one point. Yeah, I thought he was actually pretty good. I was probably a little bit overzealous with my expectations of Brad Peacock, but yeah. So I can't. And we got some audio we're going to have to get to next break or next segment with Jeremy Booth, his appearance on the Killer G's, and some talk going on right now both there and on the Twitter streets with Jeff Luno. But I don't look at this team's rotation and see starting pitching as the problem. Like, I get the idea that you can never have enough starting pitching because, as Cam, as you said, maybe they go six-man rotation. Guys are going to get hurt. They will have another pitching injury. But, I mean, we haven't even in this conversation, we didn't even mention the idea of possibly Luis Garcia and Lance McCullers Jr. coming back in the second half of the year. I don't see the names being available to the Astros at the trade deadline being better than a guy like Luis Garcia, a guy like Lance McCullers Jr. I'm not replacing Hunter Brown. I'm not replacing Blanco, Fromber, Verlander. The only name is Arrigetti, but still then, with if you replace Arrigetti, you're talking about six pitchers, assuming LMJ and Luis Garcia come back. So I would rather them go and find a bat, because to me the offense is much more of a limiting factor right now than the starting rotation.
No, I agree. Maybe one of those, maybe either Garcia or McCullers when they come back could be more of a bullpen guy, and that helps a little bit, you know, with the, especially if they need like a two inning bullpen guy, so, something like that. But yeah, like you were saying with the offense, they need a first baseman. As funny as it is, with the way we started the show, they're paying a first baseman $30 million for the next year and a half
to not play first base.
To not play for him. Guess what they need? They need a first baseman. So
still need it. Yeah.
I don't know who the logical targets are. I mean, I've seen Alonso, Vlad Jr.
I think we could scratch those
Paul,
off.
Like, Paul Goldschmidt.
Goldschmidt, I think they could get. Although he's another older first baseman that's not catching up with the fastball as much as he used to. So I would worry about...
Love him.
I mean, he can't hit worse than Jose Abreu. But Jeff Bagwell would love to see a first baseman not catching up to the fastball. That's his jam. But, like, I don't think they have the prospects, as Cam said, to get an Alonso, to get a Vlad Jr. So I don't think that's very realistic. I mean, I'm interested to hear what you guys... And maybe we carry this question over to the other side of the break. But some of the names that would be an option, I mean, as Cam mentioned, you know, Dubon's played some at first base. I believe Yonder Diaz got a couple starts last year. Joey Loperfido played first base in college, has done a little bit of that in the minors. So who would be the first? I mean, obviously, then John Singleton would be in the mix as well. Which first baseman do you want to see to get the majority of the starts at first base for the Houston Astros over the second half of the season? What is their what are their best options going into the next season? And then, of course, we're going to have to get into some of what Jeremy Booth said on the Killer G's about this Jeff Luhnow conversation that's popping up online. That, when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into The Bullpen. Brian McDonald here, found on X at SacBYBMAC. Cam Smith on Twitter. I keep going back and forth between X and Twitter. Cam Smith at Clutch City Cam, Sean at Sean A. Mapes, and of course our man Johnny Bumber behind the glass at Third Coast Johnny. So Sean, I'm gonna kind of toss this over to you this first part, because I was filling in for Michael Carroll. You hear Michael Carroll's voice on the station every Friday night as the host of Comicast, and then I took 3 days off around my anniversary, so I kind of been checked out this week, but. Gina Luhnow is popping up on Twitter and replying to people on Astros Twitter. What is going on with Gina Luhnow and her replies on Twitter?
Yes, the wife of former Astros GM and really architect of the golden era of Houston baseball, Gina Luhnow, wife of Jeff Luhnow, responded to a tweet saying, "How did the Astros go from seven straight ALCS appearances to complete dog bleep in the matter of one off season?" Gina Luhnow at Gina Luhnow on Twitter said, "Simple answer: Jim Crane fired Jeff Luhnow. Karma sucks."
Look, I mean, she's not completely wrong.
Karma does suck. Fact or fiction?
Well, I don't believe in karma, I respect, you know, the wife sticking up for her husband. I mean, I there's nothing wrong there, but I don't know. I mean, doesn't it come off as kind of like petty? I mean, you know why
it
your
is
husband
petty.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know why your husband got fired. Like, I mean, you could sit there and play the victim card, but you know why your husband got fired. He oversaw a cheating scandal. Like we can be adults about this. Look, I think the cheating scandal was overblown. It was more of a league-wide problem than an Astros problem. But you can't sit there and pretend to like take this righteous stand like, oh, Jim Crane fired us. We should be there. Your husband oversaw a cheating scandal. People who oversee cheating scandals get fired. What's unfair about that?
You can make the case, though, that Alex Cora was involved in cheating scandal. Boots on the ground with the cheating scandal is still managing Boston. A.J. Hinch was the manager of the Astros. He's now gotten another job somewhere else, which I think Detroit. is even a step above just coming back. Yes, he's in town right now. You have Carlos Beltran, who was going to be the Mets manager. Somehow, Carlos Beltran and Jeff Luhnow are the only people that lost jobs for any amount of time or for more than a year. Because Beltran's going to be the manager of the Mets. Now he's on the Yes Network covering Yankees games. So really, the only guy who is no longer in MLB these, what, 5 years of 4.5 years since the cheating scandal first broke, what is Jeff Luhnow?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was February 2020 when everything kind of hit the fan, so to speak.
It was right before the pandemic.
Yeah, because they were just about to report to. I remember Bregman and not Bregman and Altuve, Bregman and someone else. Maybe it might have been Altuve. I can't remember, but Bregman for sure.
Press conference.
Yeah, they had a press conference at the spring training site in Florida. It was right before the season. The reason I remember it so vividly is I was at another media group here in town at the time, and I happened to have a paid day off scheduled for that day, and I got bleeped from my program director when I got back because, oh, you're off that day, and we didn't have anyone to help us get all this on. It's like, how was I supposed to predict the day this cheating scandal was supposed to?
Speaking
come on, man.
Speaking
you have other people that could fill in and pull audio.
Speaking of having good timing or bad timing, Gina Luhnow tweeted this out on Thursday at 10:09 a.m.
Uh-huh.
The Gallon George radio program, which I am the producer of, had scheduled Jeremy Booth to come on in studio with the guys to talk about Astros baseball. And just out of luck, you know, that was the kind of big Astros news that day. It was an off day for the Astros, so there wasn't a ton to talk about otherwise. So we really got to stretch our legs and ask Jeremy Booth what he thought about the Gina Luhnow tweet and why Jeff Luhnow doesn't have a job in baseball. And here's what he said with the Killer G's on Thursday.
29 other teams said no. Ain't nobody flipping on Jeff Luhnow. Nobody's knocking down. Hey, Jeffrey. Hey, Jeff, old buddy, old pal. Come on in and run our draft for us. Come on in. No, they're like, get the hell away from me, man. That's the reality of it. And it's not about anything legal. It's about the way the guy treated people. So, Gina, I for standing up for your guy, I'd be careful throwing stones. He did an excellent job in some areas, did a horrible job in the others. But that's not why he's not getting another chance. It's the way he treated everybody and the culture he created and the harm he put people in is why he's not getting a chance. Nobody wants that.
The way he treated people? What?
I mean, it's difficult because, and I know we got more clips to follow that up, but I understand why Jeremy doesn't want to give out the name of his sources, but I've heard that talk of Luhnow maybe not treating people well behind the scenes, and we'll get some more clips played here in a second that kind of explain Jeremy's point further. But it's difficult to kind of grade the fairness of the take when you're not being given all the information. I understand why Jeremy can't go out and like, this person told it and it came from here and it's about this person. He can't do that because then those people wouldn't tell him anything. But it's difficult to crush Jeff Luhnow for something you're not being given all the information for.
Yeah, and there was, like, at the time, there was, you heard about the toxic work environment that was
Brendan Todman came from that environment.
Even before literally Brendan Todman making an asset of himself after the ALCS, but you would hear about it was a very cutthroat place, the Astros front office. And so that, I mean, Jeremy Booth, obviously he's on TV now with KJU, but he was a scout for a long time. So I imagine a lot of these are stories shared among his scout friends and guys that either worked under Luno in Houston, and some of the stuff goes back to when Jeff Luno was working as the assistant GM, or maybe it was, I forgot what his official title was, in St. Louis before he came over to the Astros.
Well, I will take cutthroat front office and seven ACL appearances in a World Series over this loosey-goosey GM crap that we have right now. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, if you want to make me cry and we can get to the World Series, fine. Like, I'll take that.
Yeah, and Jeremy Booth was, like BMAC mentioned, there's a certain point of you can't go full, can't show every skeleton in the closet, because A, some of it just isn't your story to tell. If that person who is wronged wants to tell it, they can. But I do understand where Jeremy's coming from, where he can't fully get into it. But and John, this is Booth 05. Paul did follow up and wanted a little more specifics about what Luno did and how he was, I guess, cutthroat with the Astros.
I got to go back to what you said a little bit earlier, and I know you don't want to name names here. So what is that Jeff Luno maybe took from somebody else?
Out of respect for the people that were involved in this process or involved with him over time, I'm not going to name names. Okay, what I will tell you is
don't need
this.
Names.
I will tell you this. With Jeff's background, when he went to the Cardinals, he held these wide open, interviews, tryouts, you know, basically who I want, who's coming in, who wants to, and people in this game in baseball that are working in the game, they share info. They'll talk about it. They want to advance it. It's a feel-good thing. It's a passion thing. And so when you're going for a position, you turn it in. This is what I would do. What do you think about this? That's normal. Jeff would get to a certain point with these people, and he would pocket the info. See ya. And so that process with the Cardinals starts to spread. People start talking about it. And then if you look at the hirings and firings he had with the Astros, anytime he got to a place where he thought he had gotten as much as he could from a person, doesn't matter who that was, player development or scouting. And if you talk to people off the record, they will tell you this. The turnover with the Houston Astros was record-setting. Not just when he got there, but consistently in and out. They just kept going like this and like this and like this. And the prime example, the pro scouts. When he needed to win a World Series, he leaned on the pro scouts, and they acquired a young Yordan Alvarez. But how do you fire a pro department? An entire pro department? How do you turn around and liquidate Latin America? Because you think you don't need them anymore. Because you've gotten what you have from them. You've now gotten your new job, and you've won a World Series.
Yeah, and that kind of gives, I would say, like the more specific example.
It does.
Even,
the phrasing liquidate Latin America was a little problematic there, Jeremy. But I know what you're trying to say.
Latin America, since he's running a soccer team now. Like.
You want to liquidate them. But it gives a little bit more insight into, because we started this, and I do think there's some fairness to it. And honestly, this was my belief before Jeremy walked into the studio on Thursday, was that there was some level of unfairness with how, like I said, everyone is from involved in this cheating scandal is still in baseball in some way, some shape or fashion, except for Jeff Luno. Why hasn't any team been like, you know what? You know what's cool? Winning baseball games. Let's hire him and just take the PR hit and go along for the ride. But if his name is mud in baseball circles as far as how he works with people and how he treats people, that along with the PR hit that you would get by hiring Jeff Luno, that makes a little bit more sense as to why he's no longer in MLB.
I mean, what's something we know about sports, guys? We're basically willing to forgive anything in the name of winning. I mean, so to answer
winning Gina, fixes, as a book about the Houston Astros is titled, winning fixes everything.
So to Gina Luno's question, all due respect to her, like, I mean, I think there is, whether you disagree with the sentiment or agree with it, and I have some problems with the sentiment that Jeremy Booth talked about, but whether you agree with it or not, if the sentiment is there that Jeff Luno was basically a giant a-hole that no one wanted to deal with, that's why he's not in baseball anymore. I mean, Alex Cora, Carlos Beltran, AJ Hinch, all these guys are working again. The players are all still playing. Like, the only one that's not there is Jeff Luhnow. Maybe there's something about Jeff Luhnow's personality that people, that's rubbing people the wrong way. The only part that I disagreed with, and I'll make it quick because I know we got to get to break, but I mean, it seemed like a big part of Jeremy's contention was that Luhnow was taking ideas and then and using them as his own. And that seemed to be kind of what made him the angriest. That's, from everything I know from other sports, I mean, I know this is professional wrestling, it's fake, but this, from what you hear behind the scenes of the creative process of booking those shows, that's just part of life. Like, when you bring someone in for an interview process, you're going to have to sell them on the good ideas that you have to then show them that you would be an asset going forward. Well, when you, if you give them a good idea, but they don't decide to hire you, and they hear that good idea, they're just going to delete it from their memory and not use it? No, they're going to use it. That's going to happen in football. It's going to happen in basketball, in baseball, in professional wrestling, in the regular business world. If you bring in somebody and you haven't hired them, but they tell you a good idea, you're not going to ignore that you heard the good idea. You're going to use it.
Yeah, and that's something that Jeremy talked about, where that is something that is from the business world that Jeff Luhnow came from. Jeff Luhnow came from I forgot what the specific business was, but it was a company about efficiency and about like cutting the fat in a business and doing all those things. So yes, I think some of it is also taking these aggressive business practices from outside of baseball, and you being the one to bring them to baseball, you're really the first guy to kind of run over that hill. You kind of get hit with all the arrows.
Yeah. All right. We got to get out and get to the Texans on the other side of the breaks. In an offseason of sunshine and rainbows for the Texans, a dissenting voice has emerged in local media gatherings. We'll hear about that next when the bullpen returns. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, as we air the dirty laundry in the break. None of that's going to make it to air, but that's okay. Join us. You can watch us on YouTube. I don't know if you're going to be hearing the stuff we say during break, but you should still watch us on YouTube anyway. And Sean, you can also come out and hang out with us at the Space Cowboys game in a couple weeks.
That is right. It is going to be ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 night on June 27th. That's with the Space Cowboys. Our listeners can get tickets for just, get this, $9.25. 9.25.
I get it. Yes. Yeah.
That's where you can listen.
Shout out to the people in charge for not making it 9.75. They went with the lower.
Saved you 50 cents right there.
I know.
Yes. Just by entering promo code ESPN925. That's where you can hear all your Space Cowboys game. Come watch the future of the Astros and maybe some present of the Astros in that are doing rehab starts with us, and see any of our hosts will embarrass themselves by throwing out the first pitch like happened last year with our dearly departed from the lineup, not from life. Brad Kellman.
Way to clarify that. Yes. Yes.
See if anyone Brad Kelsinger's himself.
Didn't he throw like 10 feet over the catcher's head?
Yes, he threw it to the press box. Let's see if Paul Gallant.
How was Joel's first pitch?
Joel was good.
Joel's
good. Joel's was good. It was just a good first
pitch. If like anybody in the station, like if I'm going to power rank, like who's going to take it most seriously to avoid embarrassment? I think Joel Blank would be at the top of the list.
He also played baseball.
That's true. He was also a college baseball pitcher.
He played college
baseball as a pitcher, so I would expect him to be able to throw a strike.
Do we know which hosts are going to do it this year?
I haven't heard.
Paul is a soft yes.
Okay. Yeah. What does that mean?
There's still a lot of moving parts to this.
Paul might be out drinking at the time.
Yeah, or on vacation. Yes. So
he's always at a wedding.
I will do it.
If Paul is available, it will be Paul. And we don't want Joel again. So it might be Jeremy, might be the morning show. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. So We got a lone dissenting voice, Sean, this offseason. It's all been sunshine and rainbows for the Texans offseason, but yes. Someone's pulling a Lee Corso and saying, not so fast, my friend.
Yes, to follow through on that beautiful tease from last segment. This offseason so far, it's been nothing but love for the Houston Texans, including at this very station on this very show. I feel like we've been very positive about the direction of the Texans and the Texans players, and I guess front office kind of know it because they've been making the media rounds and basically going around and getting their backs patted everywhere they go. You know, whether it's CJ Stroud on any of the 19 podcasts,
every podcast in the world, yeah.
that he's been on. Yeah. Yes. We had Casario. He'll be on. He was on McAfee. He was on Kay Adams' show. He obviously was just on the flagship. And
yeah, he's there. I think not every week, but pretty close to it. He's there a lot.
Yeah, but he was making fun of teams that have after they draft a player, they all do a standing ovation, clapping, and then saying, "Yeah, we don't do that. We just get the pick in, you know, whatever." And then our very own investigative reporter, Jeremy Branham, looked at every pick that they the Texans made.
Was it true?
They do the same exact thing that every other team
does. Oh, no. Nick!
And it was like...
We can pull the video. It's 2024, Nick.
There's Will Anderson, obviously CJ Stroud once, and you're like, okay, those are high picks.
Sure.
There's a Christian Harris one.
Oh.
ones all into third, fourth
Tegan Kiritano get a standing ovation.
Yeah, exactly. I know it was a different regime, but Sulafilo got it.
Yeah. Oh, God, Xavier Sulafilo. Yeah.
But,
he's not going to be available because he was in the quarter system at UCLA. That pick was doomed from the start. Anyway.
You done?
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done, yes. I'm still triggered by Xavier Sulafilo a little bit.
The 2018 second-round pick grievances?
Yeah. We'll stick to a little bit more current.
So this offseason, it's been obviously nothing but love. And I think at a certain point, rightfully so, but even we on the Del Olea show and on Kalon George, I think both shows, talked about when will there be the zag on the Texans offseason? Because everyone loves this Texans. Did we play the audio from Lewis Riddick last week or maybe the week before where he said, I have zero worries about the Houston Texans?
We didn't play it on this show, but I played it on the Killer Bees. Yeah.
Where he went on for a minute about how he is not worried at all about the Houston Texans this season. So we're wondering when there's going to be someone to take the terrain of, all right, Texans, chill out, win something, do something before you're talking all that talk. Well, folks, this week we got that someone. We had Jason Braddock. Used to be able to hear him not just in the city of Houston, but on these very airways here in 97.5. He wrote for the Sporting News, Texans' hubris could be their undoing. Mm. Basically saying that the Texans, there's an actual quote in here where basically the Texans need to STFU. Shut the bleep up.
I'm well aware of it. It was once the name of a finishing move for John Cena. I'm well aware.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
How about that? I mean, John Belmer knew that. He's nodding his head, yes. I mean, John Belmer, huge John Cena fan.
Yes. If I could give the Texans organization any bit of professional, stern advice that is meant for their best interest, it would be kindly STFU. That's the actual
kindly. Point. Kindly. I mean, is C.J. Stroud maybe going on too many podcasts? I can hear that argument. But you're going to have to tell me the next part. Okay, he's going on too many podcasts. Do you actually think that's going to like negatively impact his play? It's June. He was on podcasts and he was on Michael Parsons' show like in April around the draft. Like, tell me when he's taking time out of the week in season, missing preparation to go on podcasts across the league. And then I'm going to start to worry that he's talking too much. It's the offseason. I don't have a concern that C.J. Stroud is going to lack motivation going into the season and just rest on his laurels and start playing like crap. I just don't have that concern at all.
No, and the fact that he told the Texans organization as a whole to be quiet, it's just like, what are the Texans saying and talking? It's literally just C.J. Stroud going on podcasts, and he's just marketing the brand. Like, I don't see any issues with what the Texans are doing. And that's not even my favorite team. So it's just kind of like, why is he so sour about this?
I think some people usually, and look, and I respect it, but I think people just find value sometimes when everyone, as Sean said earlier, when everyone's zigging, there's got to be someone that zags and tries to make a dollar off it because they're getting the exposure and the people talking about them because they're giving the dissenting voice. I mean, I think you can make the argument that like Braddock was saying, that maybe CJ Stroud is going on too many podcasts, but. One, when you hear about C.J. Stroud's background, what he had to deal with growing up, the internal motivation that he has to be great, I don't think that type of person with that sort of drive and motivation is going to take a step back in his desire to win just because he's going on podcasts. And two, the Texans improved everything around him, so even if C.J. Stroud were to slip a little bit, he's got the increased weapons, especially with Stephon Diggs, that I think that's going to more than make up for maybe a tiny level or tiny drop in his level of play, which I don't even think will happen. So I think this is much to do about nothing.
Well, yeah, and CJ's not even talking trash. The only person that he is capping on is Micah Parsons and the Cowboys. Like, that's totally okay. Like, he's not out here talking trash about, like, the AFC South opponents or anybody else. He is literally just talking trash about Micah Parsons and the Cowboys, and it's all just, like, a bit. Like, they're both going back and forth. So it's just, like, again, I get that you, with everything going positive, there's that person that's going to say something negative just to like balance it out, but it's just like wait until something negative actually happens with this team before you put that on them. Like, this is just, I don't know, I think this is just kind of silly.
Well, a lot of people agreed with you because Jason Braddock posted this column on the 11th. I don't remember what day the 11th was.
That would be Tuesday.
Wednesday at 4:30 p.m. Jason Braddock at Jason Braddock on Twitter said, "Hey, Houston, gonna hang it up again. Thought I'd come back, give it one last shot. The game has passed me by, no worries. Da 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 da." So Jason Braddock is out of the content game.
He bowed out that quickly?
One day.
This post.
Wow.
One day, huh?
Yes, one day after.
Look, I don't know what to say to that, but I mean, one day of negative comments, if your heart wasn't in it, and I've worked with Jason before. I like Jason, as off the mic. He's a nice guy. But if your heart was so not in it to where you couldn't take one day of Twitter of replies on Twitter from guys with super long Twitter handles, guys you've never heard of, people that don't even follow you, then you probably shouldn't have been posting the article anyway.
Texans fans 6'9".
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like if you can't help, if you can't take the heat from that, then yeah, it probably was best to go ahead and get out, but you probably shouldn't have been in it to begin with.
Because it almost sounds like he did what he's like almost accusing the Texans of doing. Like it sounded like he was accusing the Texans of being like loud out there trying to get clicks, and then he posts something to oppose that to get clicks, and now he's like, whoa, maybe I shouldn't have done this. And to your point, every time that I ran into Jason Braddock when he was at the station, he was a great guy, so I have nothing personally against him. I just think that this was just a really silly thing to say.
Yeah, I just wonder when did Texans fans become Astros fans?
Ooh.
On Twitter.
Okay, okay.
Astros Twitter. Arm emoji.
Yeah,
Texas Twitter.
I think
for running people off of their jobs.
Wow, that's a good question. See, I think obviously, 2020 and everything that's happened since then from Dodgers and Yankees fans is really what motivated the Astros Twitter machine to basically attack anyone who says a negative word. The Texans really haven't had that moment. But I'd be interested to see how many comments did it actually take to drive Braddock off his point. I wonder if it did get to Astros Twitter levels, but
I hope not, because Astros Twitter is insufferable sometimes.
Okay, that is at Clutch City Cam. Those are the thoughts and comments of at Clutch City Cam. Texans, those are not the thoughts and comments of at Sean A. Mapes or at Sat by BMAC or at Third Coast Johnny. That belongs to only at Clutch City Cam.
Texans Twitter's coming up too.
All right, that is the thoughts and opinion of at Sean A. Mapes. Does not reflect at Sack by BMAC. All right, more Texans on the other side of the break, including playoff odds being put out by Pro Football Focus that has the Texans, I think, a bit too low. We're going to discuss that when we get back on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN. 97.5.